Hello, I'm Sheila Rogers. Welcome to Sounds Like Canada. This morning, a real get ready for the holidays kind of program. In half an hour, Bonnie and Liz, Bonnie Stern and Liz Driver, are food fighters, as we call them, actually agree on something.
Going back to Jamie Oliver.
And why not?
And why not?
Because I think it's one book that we both highly recommend.
Yes, we do.
Cook with Jamie, My Guide to Making You a Better Cook.
Liz and Bonnie are talking about the best books on food of this past year. They love Jamie, they love Alice Waters, and agree on some Canadian cookbooks. But beyond that, it's pure Bonnie and Liz in our next half hour. In an hour from now, the Real Kids Kids Book Panel. For 3 years, we've called upon Patrick, Emmy, and Maddie for the kid's eye view of what's good to read. And now that there's no more Harry Potter...
My heart is empty. Seriously, I feel the only thing that's keeping me going these days is the prospect of I think, two more movies.
Emmy Chahal, Maddie Porter, and Patrick Jeffrey will join me in an hour. To begin Sounds Like Canada this morning, what's a holiday without some wine? That's W-I-N-E. To start things off this morning, Conrad Edgewick and Natalie McLean join me once again. Natalie is the author of Red, White, and Drunk All Over. Conrad is responsible for A Pocket Guide to Ontario Wine Wineries, Vineyards, and Vines. Together they are Sounds Like Canada's Wine Panel. They're here this morning with three suggestions for wines that make tremendous gifts, whether as presents to wrap up for others or, I'm guessing, as a little something for yourself. Conrad is in Toronto. Natalie is in Ottawa. I'm in Vancouver. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, Sheila.
All right, Natalie, I'm going to begin with a question of etiquette. Sometimes a friend brings a bottle of wine. It's clear they'd like you to open it. Other times you hear this is something special for you. Just put it away. What do you do as a host?
Well, if I'm the host, I ask, would you like me to open this with dinner or should I put it away? I think sometimes the tougher situation is when you're bringing a bottle that maybe you've schlepped all the way back from the Okanagan or Niagara, and then they blithely put it on the counter and say, thanks very much. We'll try this later, and you've been dying to drink it. But there is a way to handle that one, too.
Bring it open.
I have no problem with that one. I have no problem at all with that
one. What do you
one.
Do,
what I
Conrad?
Do is I say, this is a wine that was recently sent to me for assessment, and I'd like to share it with you.
Oh, perfect.
And that
That's
way,
good.
If they don't want to taste it, fine, I'll take it home.
Absolutely.
If you're not Conrad Edgewick, though, what do you do, Conrad?
Well, you roll with it. I mean, the thing is that some people have planned out their dinners,
yes,
and they know exactly what they want, and anything that you bring is going to be an interference, so
right,
to speak. If they're that uptight about it, roll with it. If they're not uptight about it, they might say, let's just crack this open and add it to the table. Because, as we all know, leftover wine is great the next day.
Yeah, absolutely.
With cold pizza or not.
Yeah. And okay, you could call ahead, too. You could, if you really want to open that wine that night, if you have the foresight to call and say, I'd love to bring this bottle. What are you serving? Do you think it might go with it? That kind of might be the assumptive close, short of decanting it on the step.
Boy, oh boy, you're taking etiquette to a whole new level now.
Well,
that's great.
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you call ahead to ask what they're serving, then you can bring a nice wine in a decanter with the empty bottle next to it and say, I needed to decant this because there was sludge in the one or something.
What if someone's Brilliant. Doing that with one of their homemade wines, though, Conrad? I know they never do that to you. Might happen to me.
I get it. Well, I don't get it as often now. There aren't as many homemade wines being made because people just don't have the time. Even the young second generation Italians are buying wine. They're buying cheap wine, mind you, but they're mostly buying wine or having it made for them at these Juvents.
Right.
But they don't have the time or the places in their little condos to make it. So, I don't know.
You roll with it.
Roll with it.
Or you find a well-watered fern in the corner.
Yeah, no,
I am brutally honest. As you watch.
A lot of people don't bring me their amateur wines because I am brutally honest, and I tell them what they did wrong. And most people do something wrong. I don't criticize their wine. I say, this is a great effort. Or I'd say it's a great, if it's a great wine, it's a great wine.
Look, the first wine we have is a 2006 Estate Riesling.
I've been waiting for this.
Here it is, from Cave Spring Cellars in Niagara. All right, Conrad.
Let me talk about this one briefly.
Alrighty.
Now, here's the thing, Sheila. This is really critical for people to know. Most people have a bird at Christmas, and virtually, oh my God, I think my wine's corked. Let's pull the other one open. Most people have a bird with Christmas, and virtually everything red or white goes with simple roast chicken. Now, other birds like duck, goose, turkey, or whatever are similar but ever so slightly different in that where they vary is either in the color of the meat, it's all dark for most of them, or in their fattiness. So goose and duck are really fat. Turkey's very lean. So what you have to play to is you have to play to the fat level, and that means acidity and freshness. You need wines with freshness, bright fruit, and acidity. But if that dark meat is a little dry, then what you also want is a wine that has fantastic texture. And a lot of people don't even think about texture in a wine, but that's what delivers the pleasure. So we have a Cave Spring Estate Riesling. It means it comes from their single estate, from their vineyard on the Beamsville Bench of Ontario. And there, this grape variety, Riesling, brilliantly expresses the terroir, the soil, because it brings out this minerality that gives structure and a sort of a scaffolding to the flavor. And then the fruit is the flesh that's built on the scaffolding, on the skeleton.
Natalie, have you had a sip of it?
I have. And I love this wine.
Okay. Why do you love this wine?
Well, you know, as Conrad is saying, it's got this refreshing acidity, and we shouldn't be afraid of that word, acid. It's what gives zip to wines and makes your mouth water. And if you're wondering, does this wine have acidity? Look at the back label, and if they're saying things like this wine has citrus fruit or lemons, limes, grapefruit, anything like that, you know it has that refreshing acidity that's going to either moisten turkey or cut through the fat of a goose. This is a wonderful wine. I would serve it chilled for extra refreshment, and in a nice slender glass like a tulip-shaped glass, to get the aromas going.
Now, on the back of this particular label, it does talk about the limestone-rich soils of the Cave Spring Vineyard. Conrad, you were talking about the terroir, but does this mean if the soil's lousy that we're going to have a lousy Riesling too?
No, it doesn't mean you'll have a lousy Riesling. What it means is that you will still taste the terroir. You'll just taste a different terroir. Limestone is sort of the cleanest and leanest and chalkiest and most minerally of those soils. But it's not in any way necessarily better. It's a style that simply works. You could grow it on clay and you'll have a thicker, oilier texture, but you'll still have the same lovely tangerine and peach and white pear flavors, white peach flavors, pear flavors.
Yes, you want to make vines work for the wine, or the vines work, I should say. So a lot of soils that are good for wine or good for grape growing are not good for other types of crops. So as Conrad is saying, limestone is terrific, clay, those aren't very fertile kinds of earth. So they make the vines reach way down into the soils and get lots of those nuances, really work for their water, and in doing so, produce concentrated, flavorful grapes that result in this kind of a wine.
Hey Conrad, this is, the family chose well then when they decided to establish their vineyards there.
Well, in fact, the family was in the construction business, and the oldest of the sons, Leonard Panichetti, was kind of keen on the idea of grapes and growing wine, and it was an old traditional family thing. He'd made some with his grandfather and got really hooked on it. And when he was, I'm not sure if he was actually of age yet to drink this stuff, when he convinced his dad to rent a plane and fly all over the bench and look around at the different properties, and he selected the site from the air when he was a young, very, very young man. And over the years, he and his brother and his buddy, Angelo Pavan, his young boozing buddy, planted the vineyard and have cared for it. Angelo has become the winemaker, has made all the wines ever since. They're brilliantly made. They're clean. As Natalie says, they express the soil and the flavors beautifully. And these guys have been into making great wine from day one, and they have, for the most part, lived up to that reputation.
So this is an interesting wine to lead out with, Conrad, because I know you've said in the past that Rieslings can have a split personality. What do you mean by that?
Well, Rieslings have a split personality because they are so expressive of their soils, and you have to make different styles in different soils. So in a certain soil, you can make anything that's either brutally dry or barely off dry or medium sweet or incredibly rich and unctuous and just dripping with sugar in the right soils. In other soils, if you try to make those styles, then they'll be just blousy and overwhelming and unpleasant and dull. So Riesling is you need two things. You need a great winemaker who respects the winemaking process and allows the grape to express that, so it doesn't try to manipulate it too much. If you try to manipulate it, you get weird styles. And most of the cheap Rieslings that we have on the market are manipulated, and you can tell that because they taste artificial. They taste candied and cosmetic and just mm-hmm. manipulated, mm-hmm. like they come out of a lab.
Should we have a taste, an official taste,
yes. after all of this? You haven't been here yet? I've been tasting away. I'm in my second bottle now.
We're very thorough.
Mm.
Wow. Doesn't that just wake you up? Better than coffee.
It is better than coffee. You're so right. Mm. It's beautiful. I love the fruit notes.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And what's nice, too, is this is only 12% alcohol, and that's even a little bit high for Riesling, but it's not high these days. You know, we're getting into the 14-15% sort of vodka level
wines. With this one, you can have a second glass.
Exactly.
Or a
Very
glass.
Good.
It invites you back.
Well, let's go to our second wine now, and this is Château de Charme 2005 Gamay Noir Droit, as in right, droit, as in right, D-R-O-I-T.
As in upright.
As upright. In upright. What's that about, Natalie? What does upright mean?
Well, it was in 1982, apparently, that Château de Charme's founder, Paul-Michel Bosc, was researching which grapes he was going to plant in his vineyard. And he noticed that the Gamay Noir vine was exhibiting some very strange characteristics, or some unique ones, I should say. It stood straight up, upright, as Conrad says. And so he decided to experiment with this vine. He was very successful. You know, it's 20 years later, he's been given the plant breeder's rights. But what happened is it resulted in Canada's first vinifera vine. It generally has a richer color, texture, and flavor than the Gamay Noir grapes. And it gives you a much fuller-bodied wine that I think is just delicious.
This gathering of ours this morning is about wines that go well with holiday proceedings. What would be good about this wine with, say, turkey, with a bird?
Well, I think the Gamay has such wonderfully ripe cherry notes, and it even has a bit of pepper, which I love. It's the way that I would dress or prepare a turkey if I could cook. So, like Thanksgiving, we are outsourcing again, except my mom is coming up from Halifax to us in Ottawa.
Outsourcing to your mother.
I
love that.
No, sorry. Not outsourcing to mom. We're outsourcing to a local catering company. Poor old mom. Yeah, you come up and cook, please.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but I just think about, you know, what flavors would I want mm-hmm. either on the turkey or beside the turkey.
Exactly.
And
this
wine
is like a
is
liquid
it.
Cranberry juice.
Yeah.
Liquid cranberry sauce.
Yum. Yeah. Yum, yum.
That's a very interesting description. And so tell me about the grape that makes it that way, Conrad.
Well, the grape is it's a grape variety that has really specific soil needs.
Yeah.
And it grows best. It has most fruitiness on granite, and it has most leanness and cleanness and acidity on sand. And the particular section on the St. David's Bench Vineyard, which is directly behind the big chateau of Château de Charme, has those characteristics. There's a desiccated granite in the soil that's broken down over the years. There's tons of sand that was sort of outwashed from the larger Lake Iroquois that is replaced now with smaller Lake Ontario. So all of those characteristics add to the soil that make it perfect for a grape like Gamay that does not have very much aging potential, but is lovely when it's youthful because of its fruitiness, because of its vibrant acidity. And that, as Natalie says, cherry, and I say cranberry, you know, flavor that just succulent.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have a lot of tannins, you know, that furry mouth feeling you can get from a young Cabernet. So imagine that with turkey. That's why it works, because you're not getting the double drying. You're getting a juicy cherry and the turkey.
Tannin is an important word that you've just mentioned, Natalie, because many people have big alcoholic tannic wines with their turkey, and that's one of the worst things you can do. I mean, obviously, if you have a big Shiraz with lots of galumphing fruit, that's nice, but that mouth drying tannin is awful with turkey breast, with a slightly overcooked bird, because it just emphasizes the dryness.
Mm-hmm.
So you want something with fruit.
Absolutely. And tannin's hard on a lot of foods. The only thing it really works with is a juicy steak where your protein can dance with your tannin and glom onto
bacon,
each other.
Cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
Nuts, those kind of things. Yeah, yes. The nut skins have a lot of tannin, so they combine well.
Mm-hmm. So this is, once again, it's Chateau de Charmes, and it's the Droite Gamay Noir, and it's the year is 2005. And by the way, we will be putting all of this up on our website at cbc.ca/soundslikecanada. Natalie, would you call this a balanced wine?
Oh, I would. I would. And there's another sort of vague wine term that it's good to know or to be comfortable with it. Balance is when all of the elements of a wine are working together and no one element sticks out. So you've got your fruit flavors, you've got your level of alcohol, you've got your acidity, your tannin, and all of that should work together so that you just get a beautiful feeling, aroma, texture, when you drink this wine. And that's exactly what happens here. It just goes down so easily.
I'm with Conrad Edgebick and Natalie McLean. They are Sounds Like Canada's wine panel. And we're going to wine number three. Right on cue, I must say.
Now, Sheila,
yes?
I'm curious. Conrad. Why don't you tell us what you think about wine number three?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now, I'll just announce that it's Osoyous La Rose 2004 Le Grand Vin.
Okay, I'm pouring.
Oh, it sounds so good.
It does sound so good, doesn't it? First of all, I've just, you know, given it a great big nose with my great big nose, and I feel like I want to go swimming in it. How's that for a
yes.
start?
Okay. Yes, it is very inviting.
I feel something sort of vaguely Szechuan. Is that possible?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Because it's going to, this wine has what, you know, many don't. It has soul. It has depth. It has complexity. It has enticement.
I feel muscle.
It has muscle. But in fact, it doesn't just have muscle. It has well-toned muscle. This is no big muscular, you know, wrestler. This is just a well-toned Italian sophisticate. It's
Absolutely.
A Canadian wine made by a French winemaker, and the whole thing is owned by an American company.
Well, you can't get much more cosmopolitan than that. And I think maybe this morning of the three, this would be the one.
This is a luxury wine, Sheila.
It is.
It's twice the price of all the others.
Good. So glad I can trust my taste.
Absolutely. Got twice the taste.
Oh, dear.
Isn't it amazing how we can produce these very complex, layered, full-bodied reds as well? What a range.
It is. It's really astonishing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I'm so delighted to have you both here. But I think all three of these wines really say something about the maturity of the industry in Canada. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I'm really thrilled that you like this, because a really dear friend of yours also likes it but is not convinced. It's Jim Cuddy.
Is that right?
He's not convinced. I told him about it the first time. The first vintage came out. It was the 2001. And he went out and he bought a case immediately and opened the bottle. And said, it's okay. But I think it's just that he really likes those big Shirazi wines. But he's heard from too many other people that it's really good. And he's deferring and saying he's hanging on to the rest. He's not unloading it at some cheap auction.
I've been hoping Jim Cuddy would defer to me for years. I don't know if this is going to be the make or break case, Conrad, but it really is lovely. And what creates a wine like this?
I'll speak to that just for a moment.
And I'll get to you next,
Natalie,
for sure.
What is special about this wine is not as much the winemaking as the grape selection. They go through their grapes. They have what they call sorting tables next to the bins so that before any grape goes into a fermenter, it is inspected, and only the best grapes go in. Secondly, after the wines have been fermented and aged for a period of time in barrels, every barrel is tasted, and any inferior barrel, I hate to use the word inferior because they're not inferior, they're also superior, they're just lesser superior wines, are set aside for what they call a second vin, pétale de Soyuz, where they have a second wine to take the slightly lesser grapes from the great wine, and then they have a great wine. And they also do not focus on anything but the one wine. So they're not working in every direction with every grape, with every kind of soil. They got one soil, three grape varieties that they blend into one wine and make it the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much the Bordeaux model, isn't it, Conrad?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think of Lafite, Latour, Mouton Rothschild, this is our first growth, if you will. The whole model is the same with the grapes and the second wine and so on. And I think, too, the 25 acres that they have near Lake Osoyoos in the Okanagan is a pretty special patch of dirt. And it's also producing the complexity that we're tasting in this wine. And I think that we also want to view this wine perhaps differently from the other two that we've tasted today, in that I think it's going to be best in 5 years. This wine needs some aging, or more, yes,
or more.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that the beauty of this wine is that despite the fact that it is a wine for long aging, it's actually lovely now. And that comes back to the idea of balance and harmony, where everything is so harmonious that even when this child is coming out, it's lovely now, and it's going to continue to be lovely for many, many years.
Yeah, it's the kind of wine you want to buy a case of and just taste every year or every 2 years and see how it's evolving.
When we talk about how it's more expensive than the others, two times perhaps more, can you give me a ballpark of what
$40.
That...
$40, yeah. Okay. All across the country. And there is a website, I think it's Osoyoos La Rose, or even if you go through to the Vincor website, there'll be links to lead you there. But in all across the country, I believe British Columbia is $42. The rest of the country is $40.
Thanks for checking that out.
Which is strange because it originates in British Columbia.
Well... Those are the mysteries of taxes and everything else that's applied to the dear bottle before it lands on our table.
It's still a steal, though. It, you know, quality price-wise, it's, you know, half the price of wines of its quality or less.
Absolutely. Yeah. I asked the winemaker, Pascal, who has worked many, many years in Bordeaux. And in Bordeaux, he would, of course, be quite familiar with all the Bordelaise wines from Lafite, Latour, Mouton, etc., all the way down to the lowest ones. And they're graded by first growth, second growth, third growth, all the way down to just poor cru bourgeois, you know, cheap stuff. And I asked Pascal, having tasted this wine, what level would he place this wine in a blind tasting in amongst Bordeaux wines? And he said he'd call it a second growth. That is stunning, because the cheapest second growth Bordeaux you'll buy is 100 plus, and this is $40.
Well, buy them now.
And Merry Christmas. Thank you both very much. Great to talk to you. Look forward to the next rendezvous.
Well, thanks, Sheila.
Drinking the good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
We will. And keep sending out for your Christmas dinners, Natalie.
Okay, yes. All right, thanks.
All the best.
Happy Christmas. Happy holidays to everyone.
Hope it's wine-soaked.
Natalie McLean is the author of Red, White, and Drunk All Over. She also offers a free e-newsletter at www.nataliemclean.com. Conrad Edgebick is the author of A Pocket Guide to Ontario Wine, Wineries, Vineyards, and Vines.